Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome in. It is Sabres Live on a Friday, and not that we feel like a fraction of ourselves, Marty, but we are radio only on this day. So I can tell that you look good and are ready to go today. It's just some of our trusted audience is not getting the full profile.
I totally forgot we were radio only, so I actually put a shirt and a hat that matches to go on the show. My Buffalo Underdog Rescue t-shirt. So, just to spread the love. We got, as I said, my daughter came in almost a week ago now with a new puppy in the house, and it has been a whirlwind, man. I'm telling you. This thing, he is active. He's an Aussie, like an Australian Shepherd.
Does he have a name?
His name is Knox. So a couple of things. So we are in East Aurora and down the street from Knox Farm. And the Knox, obviously, the connection that we have to the family with the Sabres.
We have the Sabres because of the Knoxes, yes.
Because of the Knoxes. The house that we live in is an original Knox property. So that was their little summer cottage with the apple trees in the back. It was part of the whole compound that they had with the Knox farm and the stables. And so we were down the road, and I have photos and albums of pictures from the family from the 20s and 30s and 40s. And, you know, here at the house and at Emory Park. And when it was like the thing to do, going down the slides. And so we have a connection to that. And obviously, the Bills connection being that, you know, we've been Dawson Knox fans here for a while. So my daughter was debating a few names, and she said as soon as she saw the puppy, she's like, yeah, he's a Knox. And he knocks into everything. He literally is the clumsiest dog that walks into a door, walks into a window, walks into everything. So he knocks things down. The Knox family and Dawson Knox, everything comes in together for his name.
You're missing one critical piece of stringing this all together. Hard Knocks.
Hard Knocks, yes, I guess. That. Well, yeah, I think that would be, but it's K-N-O-X.
No one spells it out when you're calling from a distance. Hey, Knox.
Hey, Knox. So anyway, so it's been a week. I was so many times this week, I was like, I have puppy brain. You know, when you're like thinking of things, but then you're like trying to rush so you can do, you know, watch him. And she started school this week. So, but it's been a great week. And yes, so there is the Buffalo Underdog t-shirt that I'm representing because of that.
It's amazing what can come from a t-shirt. It's amazing what can come from a simple question like, does the dog have a name? You just gave us an incredible history of Buffalo sports lineage based on the new puppy that you have. And I love that. And we were, you know.
But it feels weird, Duffer, because so many people have showed up like over my career and said, hey, we got a new dog. We named him Marty. And I was always like, okay. Like, because we love you and there's. And so there we go. We have a dog named somewhat after a professional athlete as well with Dawson Knox.
Were any of those dogs tall?
I remember these people sending me, telling me at the arena after a game, I drove out the back parking lot and, you know, they're waiting and they're like, Marty, just want you to know we got a dog and his name's Marty because we love you, this, that, the other thing. And then maybe 6 months later, I got, you know, fan mail. And they had sent a picture of the dog, and it was a Weimaraner, like those gray dogs, like, you know, so anyway, it was a beautiful dog. So I felt like encouraged that, you know, I was a beautiful representation of a dog.
Amazing. We have a special guest later on in the show. Shayna Goldman, of course, is on U.S. Open assignment, not officially, but yes. It's kind of her thing. So she'll rejoin very soon. Of course, it's Labor Day weekend. So we're all trying to look forward to, you know, for many, just the wind down and the ramp up that comes with this period of time on the calendar. And of course, it's New Music Friday. So that excites me to no end. I don't even, you know what, like the Joe Valeno era is over in Seattle, but we're still going to do the Kraken as team of the day. I know it was concerning He'll probably light it up in Montreal now that I've said this. But anyway, Seattle is our team of the day.
He's a pretty decent player.
He's a decent player. He you know, not to belabor some of the, you know, negatives, but he,
we talked about him,
was on the ice for a lot, an awful lot. Yeah. But yes, this is all tongue in cheek, folks. There really was no Joe Valeno era in Seattle other than a buyout. Now they're going to have to contend with that $379,000 cap hit for each of the next 2 years. I'm not sure they're going to
be able to. Jason Mottrell move. I mean, he put his stamp on what he wanted to do with Joe Valeno. Traded for him just to buy him out.
I can't get my tongue out of my cheek here. Like, this is ridiculous. But like the other half of this that makes me, obviously, you can tell I'm like animated, agitated, whatever. Is that basically this transaction ends up creating the Chicago Blackhawks' highest paid forward in Andrei Burakovsky.
Yes.
Like, our producer Jeff is sitting here going, what has happened this summer outside of nothing? Well, this capsulizes, like, in part in, what is it? Encapsules? Something. Anyway, my brain's rattled. Like, this
puppy
is
brain.
This is the summer of the NHL. Like, this is what we're talking about. This kind of stuff is what we're talking about in this world where all these teams have cap space and are just trying to look a little different than they did the year before, but with very, I mean, we're deep into
Seattle
the S's here
in
the alphabet for NHL team of the day here. And, you know, there's been a lot of, okay, that's kind of just where teams are at.
It's weird because Seattle's saying we don't want Burakovsky anymore. We feel like he's not performing and he's not the type of player we want. 10 goals, 27 assists, 37 points last year. Nope, no good. So instead of saying, well, we have the cap space and that $5.5 million, at least we're getting maybe some production. Maybe he gets up to 15 goals. And no, we're going to trade him to Chicago to get rid of the 5.5. We're going to acquire Valeno and we're going to buy him out. And we're going to go in a different direction. So the different direction that they went is that they traded from Mason Marchment, not Mason McTavish. When I wrote Marchment, I wrote it in big letter today because I've been kind of confusing McTavish and Marchment. So they trade for Mason McTavish. They trade for Freddie Gaudreau with the Minnesota Wild. They sign Ryan Lindgren. They change their coaching staff after 1 year, Dan Bylsma. This is the changes they wanted to make. They went very much like, hey, we got to revamp. If we have to buy out a guy, trade a guy we don't want, we'll do it. And that's what Jason Botterill did in Seattle.
This is year five. And by the way, before we get too deep into this, all of these discussions, these talking points, these teams of the day and their connections, sometimes they're very blurry and not really direct, but anything that ties in with the Sabres, always hit us up at Sabres Live on social. And, you know, your questions about these teams may be completely different than what we're talking about. And we always can use a little tweak every now and again to send us in different directions. The fact of the matter is, this is year five for the Seattle Kraken.
Yes.
This is their third coach. This is probably not what the plan was for Ron Francis when things started. Well, you're looking at me sideways like a new puppy.
No, I'm
What's
like,
up?
The part that is weird for me is that, okay, Dave Axtell was brought in for the first coach of the Kraken, did a decent job.
He should still be there. If the world was not so, if the world was not so impatient, Dave Axtell should still be there in year five.
Probably, but then they doubled it up with the impatience. They said, you know what? They brought in Dan Bylsma to, first of all, be an assistant coach in the American Hockey League, knowing that they were going to have him as a head coach in Coachella Valley. He goes there, has tons of success for 2 years, goes up to Seattle. That was the progression. They knew they wanted him to come up. And after 1 year, they say, we're done. We're done with you. And they move on. They hire Lane Lambert. And so I feel like the impatience of the organization with Dave Axtell was doubled down with Dan Bylsma.
I agree. And year one, they had, I don't know, do they do expected point? Like, we talk expected goals all the time. Was there an expected point total from the analytics people within the NHL for what Seattle should earn in year one? Because they got 60, and I don't think anybody expected them to get more. But everybody was wrong in year two.
They weren't expecting them to be Vegas first year. Absolutely.
Everybody was wrong in year two. Because Dave Haxtell and company got to 100 points. They got to the playoffs. They played 14. 18 Stanley Cup playoff games, winning in game seven in the round one, losing in game seven in round two. Can you name the goaltender who played all 14 games for Seattle that year in the postseason?
Oh, my goodness.
I want to give you a hint so bad.
Give me a second. Was that Grubauer?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Sorry, didn't mean to yell.
I feel like it was so obvious that I started questioning my thinking, because Grubauer was brought in, right? So he was in Colorado. He leaves Colorado to go to Seattle right at the start. And then he had a couple of good years, and then it's been dropping since. So that's why.
Kind of true, but not really.
Yeah.
So in that year, when they had 100 points, who was the wins leader on the Seattle Kraken? Because Grubauer didn't even win 20 games.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
Chris Drieger wasn't there by then, right?
No, sir. Long-time NHLer. Long enough to West Coast guy. Well, meaning he played out there.
He played out there.
I'm probably misleading him. Martin Jones.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Martin Jones was really good with Seattle. You're right.
So Jones had 27 wins. Grubauer had 17. They had similar numbers, but somehow Grubauer wrestled the starting job.
Yes.
And in the playoffs. And it was against his former club in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And they win in seven games. The start of the next series against Dallas, Grubauer has three very strong games. They were up 2-0. He lost a game three despite a lot of saves. Then it just, they stumbled after that. My question to you, as we look at, and by the way, the Kraken would then go on after that playoff year to seasons of 81 points and then 76 last year, and now who knows what, with the roster that will, be out there under Lane Lambert as head coach. Mm-hmm. But Philip Grubauer is still on the roster.
Yes.
He may have some outside pressure. I mean, he's got enough inside pressure. I can only imagine how hard this has been for him. If you go back and you look at his stats with Colorado, he was a Vezina finalist before departing for Seattle. Marty, this is hard. Like, we talk a lot and sometimes unintentionally just poke at, lack of success or whatever. This hurts. Like, this hurts looking at what hasn't happened for Grubauer as the number one guy. So much so that there's now two guys paid to be number one, and Joey Decord is clearly the number one, and Philip Grubauer is not, but he's on the team. There might be that little external pressure from Matt Murray, who signed a one-year deal. But keep in mind, they've got enough prospects. Like, so Matt Murray's not really there to play in the American Hockey League. Like, I think he's really there. And we talk all the time, what if somebody needs a goalie? Like, does somebody at Edmonton take a chance somewhere along the way and say, oh my God, we can help Grubauer. Grubauer can help us. Whatever.
They did change their goalie coach in Seattle this year. Maybe that's a big thing.
It might
to
be.
Help
so,
Grubauer.
So my question to you, having lived this position, what do you think happened to Grubauer?
For me, it's simple. The Colorado Avalanche with Philip Grubauer were the best defensive team in hockey. And people don't realize that because Makar and McKinnon. But when you look at expected goals against, high danger chances against, puck possession, Colorado was the number one defensive team in hockey. And so he goes to Seattle, not the same thing with the Seattle Kraken. Just last year alone, Seattle was 25th in expected goals against at 5-on-5. So defensively, they're not that good. They give up a lot of chances. And I think Joey Decord is a fighter. Joey Decord is a goalie that went to Arizona State, right, when they just started their program, went through the minors and work his way. And now he knows how to fight regardless of the quality of the shots or whatnot. And Philip Grubauer was a goalie that had a ton of success when he was well insulated. I think that has a lot to do with it. If Seattle under Lane Lambert gets better defensively, gets better at protecting the middle of the ice, gets better in puck possession, I think we're going to see Grubauer get back to fighting for that number one job. But last year in the NHL, Philip Grubauer was 64th out of 66 goalies that played over 15 games in expected goals against or whatever. Mm-hmm. The two worst goalies were Georgiev and Sam Ersson when Joey DeCour was 8, along with, like, in the same category as Shesterkin, Sorokin, right. Stolarz. Like, that's a big difference for me. Like, you play on the same team. One is 8 and one is 64 or 63rd or whatever. Like, that's a big difference.
Well, I hope, honestly, that somewhere in the next couple of years, Grubauer does for himself feel like he can be what he was. I will say this, Marty, and you like, the greatest benefit for my career has been sitting next to the people that I've sat next to, like you, where I just like absorb, try to learn. Obviously we're all built with our own opinions, but I will say this. There were times you and I have watched Grubauer specifically in person, where it's almost uncomfortable. There were nights where it's like he is not what he was, and whether it's positioning or rebound control or things like that. And then you're just like, wow, like you have to find a way through. And now it's not just him. It's this team that has regressed in consecutive seasons down to these 81
and 76. But I like the team. I mean, I like their roster. So Grubauer, okay. Just quickly to wrap a bow on Grubauer, he's listed at 6'1". I feel like he's 6 foot and plays small. So mm-hmm. That's a problem. When you're not a big goalie and you play small, then you like people pre-scout you and they take advantage of your weaknesses. And I feel like more on tape allowed for teams to take advantage of Grubauer. And so that's an issue. But I look at their roster. I look at Matty Berniers, Shane Wright, McCann, Schwartz, Marchman, Eberle. I'm looking at their group of forward and I'm like, I like their group of forward. They didn't score. I mean, Schwartz had 26 goals. He led the team in goals last year. They didn't score a ton, but they were well balanced in their scoring. Matty Berniers needs to be better. There's definitely needs to be a big jump in his production. He needs to mm-hmm. be better. Shane Wright had a better year than Berniers production-wise, and that was his first full NHL season.
Well, the second half was very significant for Shane Wright. And absolutely. We've talked a lot about Corey Pronman and the pipeline rankings this week on The Athletic, and Seattle is sixth, and Shane Wright and Matty Berniers are both still very much in that based on age, regardless of games played. And they have, you know, the likes of Berkeley Catton and Jake O'Brien, where that's why Pronman has them ranked so high from a pipeline standpoint. He says, and you've kind of alluded to it, they really do need to hope and push to develop that defense core.
Yeah.
You know, in front of, obviously it's going to be Joey DeCord here for the next handful of years, but
they did go, they acquired Ryan Lindgren. We talked about that, right?
Well, they did on the heels of Brandon Montour last year, which is significant, but not unlike Nashville, Seattle didn't get the pop or the whatever from Chandler Stephenson and Brandon Montour last year. And neither were like, there was nothing. This was not like Stamkos Marchessault not performing to their level in Nashville. These guys were kind of what they are, but they didn't.
Well, maybe Montour especially. Montour had the 1 year with Florida, right? Where right. they go
we
to
know
the,
what he is, right?
They go so to the Seneca final. They lose that year, but he had 73 points. But right. it regressed to 33 2 years ago and 41 last year. And Florida moved on from Montour. But maybe that's what he is, a 40-something.
40-something is exactly what you want him to be. Like, I have no problem, especially when you already have Dunn. Like, my goodness, Marty, when they made the playoffs in year two, Vince Dunn had 64 points. Yeah. Like, so you only need a couple of these guys that are, and Chandler Stephenson basically got the point totals that Chandler Stephenson gets. It's just, it didn't help bring the group to a new level. So you hope that with your mention of Marchment and, you know, like a full year of Capo Caco, I honestly, like, I really like Freddie Gaudreau. I think from a depth standpoint for this team that has always had depth, I think it's a really good fit for them. So
$2 million. I mean, that's a great fit. I mean, forget about it. But I do think that spending seven plus on Montour, seven plus on Matty Berniers, six plus on Stevenson. Like, okay, you're going to need to give me more than what last year was for those guys. And I, if you want to be in the playoffs. Now, if Montour goes out and gets you 45 to 50 points and scores 15 goals, I think it's the value is okay. Mm-hmm. But if you want to get in the playoffs, maybe that needs to be 60 points for Montour, or maybe that needs to be 70 points for Matty Berniers, not 43. That's the thing.
Yeah. When they made the playoffs, McCann scored 40 goals.
Yeah.
That's a lot. But they still had, like, from that second year, they had McCann and Dunn and Eberle and Beniers and Schwartz and Larson and Tolvin and Oleksiak and a very tiny little sample of Shane Wright at the front end of his career, and Grubauer, and to a much lesser extent, Decord. So you really do have to, I assume, focus largely on those who've come into the organization last year and this year and coaching. And
because coaching, their power play was 23rd. Their penalty kill was 21st. Like, there's some work to be done there.
I don't know why.
Good luck, Chris Taylor. He was brought over by his buddy Botts, but with Leighton Lambert, and
right. He's
going to be in charge of one of those things.
I might be overstating it. I feel like Leighton Lambert got a bit of a raw deal on the island. Like, there really wasn't that much of a blip or that much of a change in record under Patrick Waugh. They had the 9-10 game hot streak at the end 2 years ago to get in, but then you saw that they were basically still very similar to the Lane Lambert Islanders last year when they missed, right? So to me, it's been above so how do you look at Lane Lambert this time around then, and like what that could look like? Remember, like, a couple of years ago, Seattle came in, they had I want to say they had a bad start, but then they got really, really good for a while. Obviously didn't make the playoffs in that season, but it was so impressive to watch the balance with which they were producing. But I feel like what you've just been saying is you need the coach to maximize your absolute best players. Sure, do you want balance? 100%. But how does Lane Lambert get the best out of, and which players is it to make this difference?
So Lane Lambert was an assistant coach with the Toronto Maple Leafs last year. He worked with Craig Berube with a new team, right? Berube coming in first year after Sheldon Keefe. And I think Berube got the best out of Marner as a new coach. He got the best out of Nylander. He got the best out of a lot of guys. They win a round. They lose in the second round. Obviously, it's disappointing. But for Toronto fans and the organization, but I think Lane Lambert probably learned a lot from being on Craig Berube's staff. How do you push guys, and how do you respect their space? But and you're right. I think he got a raw deal in Long Island. In the 3 years that he was there, look, he had two identical seasons. One season of 42 wins, 31 losses, and nine, and then boom, the next year they're like, you're four games over 500. Technically, and we're going to move on. So I felt like that was a raw deal. But when he's coached at the professional level, and I'm going to include the AHL, he's always had success. Mm-hmm. Always had his teams in the playoffs, always had success. So he's not a name, right? He's not a Berube or, you know, John Cooper or a big name, Sheldon Keefe, whatnot. But he has had success. And I think last year, learning how to manage big name, big guys under a first-year coach, I think that's going to help him a ton going into Seattle.
I have one name that is no longer with the Kraken. Who am I speaking about?
Well, we talked about Burakovsky. So.
No, it's pre, like, it didn't change this summer. But it will go down.
Will Borgen? Will Borgen?
No, amazingly. Amazingly.
I thought we had to bring up Will Borgen when we talk about the Seattle Kraken, but he's the Rangers.
So I will tip my co-host. I'll drop a dollar in your cup. the biggest mistake in young Kraken history was not qualifying Morgan Geekie. Qualifying. No QO. He had 16 goals in 2 years with the Kraken. He has 50 in the last 2 years with Boston and now has himself a nice long-term deal.
Yes, but we mentioned Brendan Hagel yesterday because of his birthday and everything. So that happens sometimes.
I know it does.
You know, the Sabres drafted Hagel, didn't sign him. He went to Chicago. They decided, you know, we're going to let him move on.
They got
on
two
first
round picks. They had to make that trade.
I don't know that they would make the trade now, knowing how much of a player he can be, right? So teams move on from some certain guys that they don't think is going to fit, and then they explode somewhere else. It happens to every team.
It does.
I know here in Buffalo, people will talk about everybody that has left and has had success, but it happens to a lot of different teams.
Well, we have a cup winner coming up here on the show, so stay tuned for that. We also want you a part of Hockey Fest, an all-ages street hockey tournament in conjunction with the Sabres Fan Fest. Holy cow, this is rapidly approaching. It takes place on September 13th. All skill levels are welcome for this street hockey tournament right along RJ Way. Visit sabres.com/hockeyfest to sign up your team today. We are WGR exclusive on this day. It's Sabres Live. We're back after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome back to Sabres Live on a Friday. We promised a cup champion in this second half hour of the show. We didn't tell you that she's from here, and we are thrilled to have Katie Noel on the show, PWHL champ with the Minnesota Frost. Katie, welcome in. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on today.
This is, how would you describe like what this weekend is like for you? What's coming up in the next couple of days? Being at home in the summertime as a professional hockey champion.
Yeah, it's super exciting. I actually just got the trophy today, so I know the listeners can't see it, but you guys can. So
it's nice and shiny. I love it.
Oh yeah, I made sure I gave Walter a good cleaning when he got here, but no, super excited to have Walter in town this weekend. And as in terms of public events, I'm gonna have a signing at Riverworks on Monday from 4 to 6 p.m. so that'll kind of be the chance for any local hockey fans to come down and get a photo with the cup and get an autograph if they want. So definitely have a couple fun things planned. There may be some photos with a lot of chicken wings in the cup. So that's definitely on my list for sure. So I'm just looking forward to kind of showing Walter around Buffalo and doing all the sights and sounds. Yeah.
I hear you will have a visit with the Bills maybe as well on Monday. So off the air, we were talking about he used to drive dirt cars. So are you going to talk to Deion Dawkins about his drifting that we saw on Hard Knocks?
I have been watching Hard Knocks, and I actually did not know that about him. I think that is so, so cool. So, I mean, I don't know if I'll get to meet anyone when I go on Monday, but if I do, that would definitely be someone I would be interested in talking to. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool.
How did that passion grow in you as a youngster? And tie that in with all the other sports that you loved and ultimately the decision that you made that has led you to be a champion after year one in the PWHL.
Yeah. So I started playing hockey actually when I was 2 years old and didn't get in. I actually got into go-karting maybe when I was 5 or 6. So I'd been doing both for so long. And my grandfather actually raced cars locally. Him and my dad raced asphalt cars all around the Northeast and even the country up in Canada sometimes, but most locally at Lancaster Speedway and Holland Speedway. So those are two local tracks that they both used to race at and everything. So did a lot of go-karting when I was younger. I preferred dirt to asphalt, but it was really nice to kind of have, we always called it a summer hobby, but it was really never a hobby. We took it so much more seriously than that, obviously. Always put your best foot forward at everything you do type of energy, but did both for so long. And then I stopped racing when I was 16. But the skills that I learned from racing and everything translated, I think greatly to hockey. And though it is kind of an individual sport, it's, you're still working with the crew, you're doing all that, and you need to make sure that you're handling your business in order to be the best that you can and to get the best results. And that translates to hockey. So learned a lot of skills from there. It was a great thing I did with my family. And, in terms of hockey, I mean, I've been all over the place. It's taken me to some great places, some countries I would have never been. I've been to Russia. I've been to Japan. I've been all over, and it has been such a journey. And my parents are saints, to say the least. They've taken me so many places and everything. But to finally reach the professional level. If you would have asked me 5 years ago, this wasn't even an opportunity. So the fact that I was able to right out of university, become a pro and then win it in my first year, it's almost kind of storybook. So I don't know if I can top it, but I'm obviously going to try.
So when you drive cars, obviously quick reaction, pressure, right? At any moment, things could go crazy. So take me back to Game 3 of the Walter Cup final. Like Ottawa and Minnesota, you guys went to overtime in Game 1. Ottawa win, overtime in Game 2. Minnesota, you guys win. And now it's Game 3, triple overtime. Shot on net, you're in the slot, and you get the game-winning goal to put you guys up one win away from winning a championship. But quick reaction in the slot on the back end. So take me through that game and that moment in third overtime.
Yeah, I've played in a lot of big games, and I have to say that may be the craziest one to date for sure. The overtimes just seem to keep coming along. And overall, that whole game and that whole series, the line that I was on, we were doing really well. So that game in particular, though, I had a feeling that we were due to pot one and we were due to put one in. So I got hit super hard in the chest with that shot, actually. Like, but thankfully, my reaction time and everything, I was able to be like, okay, hit me, look down, find the puck, and backhand it in. But yeah. Overall, like my line, we had a great series that game, and to be able to kind of contribute and help the team like that in such an important moment in the final series, it was awesome. It was so cool.
Local standout Katie Knoll is with us. She's a PWHL champ with the Minnesota Frost, and it's amazing, isn't it? Like what, almost 15 months ago, you were drafted into this league. What was life like in the first few days of professional hockey, and then did you find the comfort that you were seeking early on, or it came later? How would you describe it all?
Yeah, I think honestly, everyone's journey is different. I was actually still in school when I got drafted. So I went to the draft from Boston. I was at Northeastern finishing up my master's and didn't finish that until August, and then reported to camp in November. And I was only a camp invite, so I didn't even have a contract. So I was kind of just under the mindset of do what you can, work as hard as you can, and control the controllables, and hopefully you earn a spot. And thankfully, I was able to make my way onto the team, get a one-year deal. And like I said, everyone's journey is a bit different. I feel like I may have struggled a little bit right at the beginning, but the jump from university to pro is, you can train as much as you want, but there's really nothing like being on the ice. I'm sure you guys know that. So it obviously took a little bit to get my feet under me, and I didn't play necessarily every game, but the ones I did, I feel like I made it count. And towards the end of the season, I got the chance to be in the lineup a little more consistently, and honestly just really focused on making those opportunities count, seizing every opportunity that I got, and it ended up working out for me. And by the end of the season, I was playing pretty consistently and couldn't have asked for more.
So you played at Nichols, and I do some work in this offseason with the goalies, and we've had goalies from Nichols. We've had shooters, like some of their teammates come in, and the girls, the program is awesome. And then it takes you to Northeastern. And if I'm not mistaken, you were there kind of crossing over with Devin Levi, right? So he was there for a couple of years, and then that was like kind of right after COVID. So did you interact with the men's team there? Did you know Devin? Because obviously we're Sabres Live and we talk about him quite often on this show as well.
Yeah, I overlapped with Devin for, I think it was 2 years.
Yeah.
He was just coming in. I think I was maybe a junior or senior, but I think there was 2 year crossover, and it was so cool to see him, when he got, traded to the Sabres and everything. And then he kind of started going through and he got his chance. And I was like, I have season tickets to the Sabres. So when I'm home and I get to go to games, and it's so cool, like I'm watching him play in net, and I'm like, obviously always cheering for him. And that Northeastern connection is super strong. So it's always fun to see your friends from college and everything kind of succeed at the next level. So obviously,
and now like Kesselring too, right? Like he is a Northeastern guy as well.
Yeah. Funny enough, I actually worked on a group project with him my freshman year.
Oh, really? So
yeah, small world. So it's cool to see him on the Sabres now too.
Was he a good project? Student?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it was a communications class. We were like, it was the summer before our freshman year. So like the men's and women's players came in beforehand, and yeah. We were in a class with like a bunch of older kids too, and we were all like incoming freshmen, and I'm sure like all the graduate students like hated us probably because we were athletes, and even though we did our work and we handled our work, there's always that stereotype around athletes. So, but no, it was a blast. We always tried to like stick together and try to be in like the same groups if we could, so we didn't get stuck with other people.
Katie, you've had the opportunity, as you stated, to go global with your career. Well, I mean, in the early stages, obviously under 18, and gold and silver, and this is a big year internationally for hockey with the Olympics. Are you still chasing those opportunities, to represent nationally again? Describe just how hard it would be to get to that level based on the growth of the game, specifically as we talk about women's hockey here.
Yeah, the landscape of women's hockey is ever changing, and it's specifically national level. There's always such a big pool of players in consideration, and you honestly never know when you're going to get a chance. It's nothing's ever really until the final roster is named, you never really know. So it's kind of, especially with how much the league has grown recently, it gives all of us the opportunity to, if we have a good year, like you have a solid shot. So I think that that is so exciting. And it would look a lot different if we didn't have the PWHL now. So, even just for players in the pool and everything, I think all of us are super excited that we have a consistent place to play and play competitively and really be able to show off our skills and everything. And I don't want to say every game's a tryout, but in a way, it's like it kind of is. And but now that we have the league, I kind of just try to focus on the controllables and what I can do. And when I'm signed with my team in Minnesota, like that's who I'm focused on. I'm focused on helping them be the best team that we can be and doing my best there. And if that brings greater things, and if I get a nod in the future, that's obviously great. But kind of just focusing on the here and now and doing that. And if the chance comes again, obviously I would be honored. And that's always the big goal, is to make it to the national level. But the fact that we have a professional league now to play in, it's also kind of at the top too, and that's super exciting. So I want to stay in the league as long as I can.
Who did you grow up watching in the women's hockey game? Because we talk about national game, a team, Ahalys Kimura has been on the show before. We had her on actually from the Olympics on Zoom the one year. And she's local, but there's a lot of other local women and girls that you probably grew up watching. You are now one role model for all these girls as well. So who did you grow up watching?
Yeah, I love Scams. I'm pretty tight with Scams actually. So it's awesome to see her have all of her success, especially on the national team too. And she's such a role model for local kids. And I have to say, national team wise, like when I was younger, it was really only the national team that we could watch. There wasn't a professional team and everything. So obviously the Hillary Knights, the Kendall Coins, and I still say to this day, like the fact that like I sit in the locker room next to Kendall is just like sometimes it's like mind blowing to me. Like we're friends, but in the same breath, I'm like, oh my God, that's Kendall. And like little girls still like scream when they see her. So that's super cool, and kind of to grow up watching them and to now be teammates with them is surreal, and to be able to learn from them. And they've been through it all, from when there was no professional league, from when they were fighting just for like equal pay and equal rights and that stuff, and to kind of hear about their journey and the things that they went to in order for someone like me to come right out of college and to be able to play professionally. It's super grateful for them, and it's honestly just an honor to be their teammate.
Not gonna lie, we had Hillary Knight on the pre-game this year, right before the game in Buffalo, and I was intimidated and in awe. Like I was like, oh my gosh, this is Hillary Knight. So I could see how that would be for young girls growing up watching her do all that she did. So that's pretty cool.
Katie, give our audience once more what's the plan here for you and the opportunity for them to see you on Monday.
Yeah, Monday down at Buffalo Riverworks from 4 to 6 p.m. The cup will be there if anyone wants a photo and an autograph. So I hope to see all the local hockey fans down there on Monday night.
Awesome.
Congratulations on your success. We're honored that you joined us today, and try to cap, what you did in year one with another amazing season in Minnesota in year two.
Yep, that's the goal. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Katie Knoll, PWHL champ, with us here on Sabres Live. We're back after this.
Back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
It's a long weekend, so Fridays are like extra special, right, Marty?
Yes.
Everybody's just ready to go into Labor Day weekend. It's also Friday. That means New Music Friday. So, you
Yes.
ever feel like your worlds collide? whether it's in music or whatever, like something in life where you're just like, how is this happening?
Yes. Sometimes you hear a song and it makes you think of another song. You're like, oh, the stories are kind of together, or artists. And so, yeah, that does happen. And sometimes there's a crossover in language too. I hear an English song, makes me think of a French song that I know from back home, and it crosses over like that.
Well, it's been about 2 years running that Stephen Wilson Jr. has probably been on the tip of my tongue as like my favorite artist. Yeah. And then also over the last couple of years with my oldest, we've been to Smashing Pumpkins concerts twice. And incredibly, Stephen Wilson Jr. released an EP called Blankets today, which is four covers from 90s era grunge alternative. And he has consistently played the Nirvana cover that he does since his Son of Dad tour started back in March of 24. But incredibly, this new EP features my favorite Smashing Pumpkins song, Tonight Tonight. Oh. And so needless to say, I texted my daughter this morning saying, I'm sobbing to no one's surprise. It's amazing. And I just think of all the songs in the world or all the songs ever by the Smashing Pumpkins, that my current favorite artist would pick that one to do. It truly does blow my mind sometimes how small the world is and how small music, you know, music's world can be, but how
and
directly.
I still remember that video from the Smashing Pumpkins, Tonight Tonight. What a song, and the orchestra and everything. So I can just feel the energy through it.
The strings are what get you every single time in this.
Man, that is so cool. So I'm going to have to go listen to it. I'm going to have to check it out today.
They're also,
I'm going to go cut the grass. And when I cut the grass, I put my headphones on and I listen to music. I'm going to put that on today.
The other covers in the four song EP are of the bands The Postal Service and Temple of the Dog, which again brings about sadness because it was Chris Cornell's band. And when you hear that song, it doesn't matter who's singing it. You can't not think of Chris Cornell. And as much as I love Tonight Tonight, like Hunger Strike cover by Stephen Wilson Jr. might be the best one on the EP. It is so, so good. Well, I'm out of birthdays on this day. Marty,
well,
did you
know
have
what?
Anyone
I, because
you wanted to, you
of
to give
birthdays.
A shout out to?
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Joe Foy, who was a great biz dev. Like, I don't even know what his title was, but he was the head guy.
You can say leader.
The business development leader for the Sabres, 21 years with the organization. Yesterday was his last day. He's going to go out and do something else. But we used to work closely with BizDev when it came to events and partners. And so there was a great turnout yesterday morning at the arena. Breakfast was served. He had a little speech. So it was great. So I told him that when he comes to a game this year to stick around the set after, that we'll buy him a beer. So, or Rich Jureller will buy him a beer, whatever. But congrats and thanks for all these years of service to Joe Foy, 21 years. That's pretty impressive.
I wonder if you actually know how good your segues are sometimes. Because we were just talking about music, and if you think I like music and go to a lot of shows, no one knows music or cares about music deeper than Joe Foy. That was incredibly well played on your part.
Well, I mean, that whole team at BizDev is awesome with the Sabres, and they were such a tight group, and so there was some tears shed yesterday from a lot of people, but I think it's all big smiles, and it's all great, so congrats to Joe. Hey, I filmed a little thing yesterday too about new safety features at the arena to evolve, like walking in, you know, I have to take things out of your pocket. So we saw that released today, but there will be a video that's going to come out soon on Sabres.com. So check it out. I went through with Sabretooth, didn't take my cell phone or my keys or my change out of my pocket. And it was really quick.
Do you remember who our team of the day was today?
Seattle.
I never asked, will they make the playoffs?
No.
We got 10 seconds. You can't elaborate? I'm just kidding. folks.
Minnesota, St. Louis, Winnipeg, Colorado, Vegas, LA. There's too many of them.
Enjoy Labor Day weekend, folks. Thanks to our terrific crew. Have a safe weekend. We'll see you next week.